that day, I remember we talked about Bruce Springsteen, which had a quote that we use sometimes in the office, which was when he goes on stage, he has to deal with two completely contradictory ideas. One of them is this show is the most important thing in the world, but also it's just rock and roll. And to be able to balance those two ideas, I think, is one of the ways to handle the moment.
Welcome to the first episode of the Friends of McGill Hockey Leadership Line Change Podcast. On this podcast, we interview McGill Hockey alumni with a specific list of questions relating to the themes of leadership, mentorship, habits, and resiliency in an attempt to tease out life lessons that have brought them success in their domain. Today's interview features Martin Raymond. Marty is currently working as the assistant GM of the Gatineau Olympique and coaching for the program Sportitude at Dumortang Hockey Academy in Boucherville. His coaching experience includes stints as assistant coach with the Tampa Bay Lightning, Ottawa Senators, and Hamilton Bulldogs, in addition to time spent as head coach of the Drummondville Voltigeurs. Internationally, Marty has worked with Hockey Canada on the coaching staff for gold medal teams at the U20 and U18 World Championships. Notably, Marty scored over 70 points in two separate seasons while playing for McGill from 1987 to 1992, a career that earned him an induction to the McGill Sports Hall of Fame in 2011. Following his playing career, he got in the McGill hockey program as the head coach from 1995 to 2009, leading the team to a Queen's Cup championship in 2008. Marty holds a Bachelor of Education and Master's in Sports Psychology from McGill. Without further ado, let's get started. Marty, welcome to the podcast. Can you briefly tell us a little bit about what you've been up to lately?
Eric, good to be with you, and really excited to go through this today. Always looking forward to listening to the podcast. First time I get a chance to actually do one, so pretty excited about that. So listen, pretty excited right now to be back home after maybe a 10-year stint from McGill. Now at Dumortang, as you said, and enjoying myself coaching hockey and spending times with young hockey players and some really good coaches, and still learning as a coach and enjoying my time with Gatineau as well as a part-time assistant general manager, with Louis Robitaille, my former assistant coach when we were in Drummondville in the Q.
Now, Marty, from playing for you from 2004 to 2008, I always found that you had some great inspirational quotes and books to give to the players. So we have the first couple of questions. I'd like to hear from some of your favorite inspirations. So can you recommend a book or podcast to our alumni and to the current McGill team that you think would be good?
Well, COVID-19 obliges. I think we have to be aware of what our current team at McGill is facing, which is really not easy. We're lucky enough right now at Dumortang, where because we're a Sportitude program, the government has allowed us to continue to practice on individual skills. We're not allowed to compete. We're not allowed to play. We're not allowed to do any team tactics or any battle drills or stuff like that. But we get to work on their individual skills with the puck, without the puck, skating, puck handling, those kind of things. And I understand that McGill has not been as fortunate, unfortunately, and government is not allowing as many university sports to even practice right now. So the book I'm thinking about for them is Wherever You Go, There You Are. And I think that Jon Kabat-Zinn is the guy that wrote the book. It's an interesting book. A lot of it is about meditation and about being in the moment and about dealing with the present and, what you're facing and not wanting to be anywhere else than where you are. I mean, one quote I like from Tony Robbins is life doesn't happen to you. It happens for you. And I think that when you put things into perspective, I mean, my parents told me stories about when they were young and, having to grow up as children in the Second World War, through the Second World War, and what that entailed, and, some of the restrictions that the population had in terms of going to the groceries and only allowed to buy a certain amount of food because everybody was rationed. So I think it's unfortunate right now. It's really I'm sad to know that right now they can't play. We gotta make the best of what we got right now. We're many of us still have help, and we have to make the best of that.
So on that same topic of books, just thinking back to your coaching career, what's one book you've recommended to your players or your team most often?
Most often. That one's a tough one because I've recommended books to everybody. Some of them never came back when I lent them. But I probably stole a few books from a few guys as well. I think Adam Schell, one of my former assistant coaches, gave me a great book on Peter Jensen. And, you know, I think I lost it. I don't know where it went. So somebody else probably has it now and enjoying it, I hope. That one's a tough one. The older guys still laugh at The Art of War because I used to quote it a lot, especially earlier in my coaching years. We had a lot of fun with that in the 99-2000 years. And, you know, I came up with some of the themes that we had as a group. And The Art of War from Sun Tzu, we use that. I always tried to, you know, refer a book to a player that would be fitting for what he needed or what he would like, what would give him the most help. And I could tell you, in today's world, with so much anxiety and so much stress on performance, I found that the Bob Rotella books on golf, such as Golf is Not a Game of Perfect, Golf is a Game of Confidence, those kinds of books. I've referred those books a lot to players. I think goalies especially, but also players in general, I think you can benefit from just being in the moment and following some of his maxims that he uses. I think they're very, very helpful to make sure you're in the moment and you're focused on what you're doing.
Now, you mentioned a quote from Tony Robbins as being useful for the current players. And just thinking back to your life, is that a quote? Is there any other quotes that have been helpful to you? And maybe why has it been helpful?
When Kelly Nobbs and I coached together, and Nobbsy was my assistant for a couple of years when he did his master's, he had gone on to teaching for a few years after graduating from McGill. And we had a lot of fun in the office because Kelly was a master's student that had some time during the day to come to the office and prepare practice, and we would talk. And so we would chat a lot, and Nobbsy really liked the meditation side of things too in those days. So we talked about Siddhartha and all these kinds of things. We had a lot of fun, you know, Phil Jackson. And so we talked about those books. The one quote that I called Nobbsy, and I told Liam that story last year. I'm not a big music fan, but at the same time, Bruce Springsteen is one singer that I really like. And I got the opportunity to attend one of his shows in Tampa when I was there. And it was fantastic. And just the way he connects to people, and he brings his metaphors with the show, with life in general for the everyday person. I mean, I just love his philosophy and how he sells it. So one quote we talked about, Nobbsy and I, and I found that one out. I don't know where I found it, but anyway, we talked about it. We really liked it. And the day before the national championship finals, I called Nobbsy and we talked about that quote. We just had a lot of fun that night. And Nobbsy was a little concerned about the next day. And we knew he was going to be fine. He was going to be well-prepared. He's a good coach. He had a great team. And they did a great job of winning the championship. But we just chatted about stuff like that. And that day, I remember we talked about Bruce Springsteen, which had a quote that we use sometimes in the office, which was, goes something like, Bruce Springsteen says, when he goes on stage, he has to deal with two completely contradictory ideas. One of them is, this show is the most important thing in the world, but also it's just rock and roll. And to be able to balance those two ideas, I think, is probably one of the ways to handle, you know, the moment and pressure and you know, when you're nervous for something, just remember those two ideas. And if you can juggle those, you're going to be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, that's a great quote. And eventually Nobbsy had that one put on a plaque, and he had that one hanging up in the office, in the coach's office there. Moving on in the questions here, talking about some life lessons and advice, like think back to your time at McGill and now all the things you've learned since then, what advice would you have wanted to give yourself entering your first year in university?
That was an interesting one when I read it, when you sent it to me. My advice to myself, if I had to redo this again, would be to trust the fact that if I want to be a hockey coach, I can make a living out of it. Because when I entered McGill, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but I wanted to go probably more into health sciences. I wanted to serve. I wanted to help people. I thought that was the right route. And I couldn't get in. I didn't have the marks, but I could get into physical education. So that was my second choice. I got in there and then did a couple of years there and then tried to look into transferring. And ultimately, I wind up liking it more and more and not being able to transfer after my first year, which I was frustrated. And I almost quit the game. I almost quit playing hockey because I wanted to get better marks to be able to transfer. And it was very hard to transfer. I'm sure it still is in health sciences. I talked to a lot of people. I attended different meetings with different profs and different faculties. I was looking to move on. And for me, I thought that making a living was going to be through service in the health sciences business. And then my hobby would be coaching. That's what I thought I was going to do. I didn't think I could make a living out of coaching. But for me, for sure, I was going to coach because I enjoyed the game and, you know, I enjoyed working with young kids and I thought that was the route. And then ultimately I wind up graduating from physical education. And then one of the profs asked me to, if I wanted to do a master's and I happened to see an advertisement about a month earlier that there was a job opening in the Maritimes that you could be a teacher in the faculty of physical education and be an assistant coach for the program. And you're going to be paid full time to do that. And I said, geez, that'd be great. So I said, yeah, I'd love to do a master's because, you know, that job that I saw the posting asked for a master's. And I'm going like, geez, I could do a master's and then work at university as an assistant coach full time, you know? And so I wind up going that route. But during all these years, I wasn't sure because I wanted to coach, but I didn't think, you know, that teaching physical education would be coaching. But later on, I realized that teaching is coaching and coaching is teaching. And so I would tell myself, don't worry about it. Just take that route and it's the right route for you. So that would be my advice.
And that's, I know one of your inspirations is John Wooden. And that's what he always says too, that a coach is a teacher, yeah. Right? Yeah. So moving on now. So think a few years later and think about the current team and graduating students. What advice would you have to graduating students entering the workforce? And then on the other side of things, what advice should they ignore?
Well, you know, I think the advice to follow would be to make sure that for success and happiness, it's all about effort. You know, I think that I hear a lot of stories from employers nowadays that they say to me that certain young people get into the workforce and are expected to have certain things right away and they're not very patient. And so for me, if I would speak to any of those hockey players that are graduating from our program at McGill, if they would ever seek for advice, I know they've got qualified people and great people around them right now, but I would say to them that, you know, just go in and work, just put in the effort, put in the hours. You'll reap what you sow, you know, long-term you do, you know, I really believe in that. And I know sometimes short-term we look at things, say, geez, you know, I'm working, but it's nothing's happening. It's going to happen. Just stay perseverant and patient and put in the work. And that would be my advice.
And then is there any bad advice you've heard that they should ignore?
Well, I definitely don't abide to the saying, fake it till you make it. I think that authenticity is important. It puts me in trouble sometimes. I can be, sometimes I can ruffle some feathers with people because, you know, I'll say what I'm thinking. You know, sometimes it might not be politically correct, but I think it's short-term pain, but it's long-term gain. I think people can deal with the truth. I think people can't deal with the lies because the lies catch up to you. So I think that the bottom line is be authentic, be true to yourself and don't try and fake anything, because sooner or later people figure it out. So I think I believe in the long game and not the short game.
So now I want to steer the conversation towards leadership. Playing for you, one of the things that struck me was your focus on developing leaders within the team and throughout their playing career. And I think back to our first meeting. I still remember our first meeting as a team, and you had one slide, one PowerPoint slide, and it said commitment on it. And that's in 2004. We're all sitting in the classroom at the athletics complex, and it just said commitment. So thinking about what's important to you as a leader, what are some examples of leadership behaviors that you look for when choosing your captains? And what are some behaviors that leaders should avoid?
I've been going through that lately, actually. And it's funny you ask that question, because we're doing a lot of Zooms, as I mentioned to you before the podcast. Right now at the Sportitude, some kids are quarantined, unfortunately, because they have COVID class cases in their class. So the whole class is taken away from the school, and also obviously the Sportitude. So we're doing a lot of Zooms with the kids. And so, you know, we're looking for different ways to different topics to talk to them, because when you have them on the ice every day and you can do some off ice stuff as well in the classroom, but it's a different scenario. But now we don't have them on the ice for like 14 days or 10 days, whatever it is. You know, we're thinking about doing some stuff on leadership. So Wayne Halliwell was our sports psych when I was at McGill, and you remember him. And Wayne was really good. We also had Gord Bloom. We used both of them, and Wayne was really good in terms of bringing us a lot of practical stuff. And I still have the day he spoke about leadership, and when he talked about leading from the front, leading from the side, and leading from behind. I think that is a very complete way to talk about it, because leadership is service. You've heard me say that, and we still say that, and Guy uses that too. He used it in Ottawa and in Tampa, and we still believe in that as coaches, that leadership is about serving. And so when you ask me about captains and assistants, it's about, you know, serving the team, and how can you serve it? Well, if you serve it from the front, well, you're the first one in line in drills. You're the hardest worker. You're an example, you're a model. Those are the kind of things that you do when you serve from the front. When the game is on the line, you're there, you know, and you may have a bad game, but you're committed to it. You're right in the thick of things in terms of helping us whichever way you can help us that day. So that for me is a leader, not necessarily a guy that, you know, is going to score the big goal all the time, but he's there for us. So that's leading from the front. Leading from the side is more about being there emotionally for your teammates. You know, it's there to support them and be listening to them and knowing what they need. And if one guy is struggling in class, if one guy is struggling at home, if he's feeling just the wrong way, you're there for him, you know, and you may have to talk to the coach. You may ask, you know, different guys to organize something, a little event, a little party, you know, just to help some teammates that are struggling with gelling with the rest of the group. Martin Routier was unbelievable for that. You know, he would set up some team events where he would try and get our Anglophones on the team to gel with the Francophones, so that both different culture within our group, which all we always had, as you know, Erks, and you did a great job with that too as a captain when you went to Chicoutimi and learn French, because you wanted to try and make sure you were able to incorporate the French and the English in the group. So those are the kind of things that I think is leading from the side, you know, just side by side with your teammates. And then leading from behind is about being able to push them and being able to keep them accountable, is the way I see it. Sometimes you're going to be hard on your teammates, and, you know, as much as you're going to be soft with them when you're on the side, you also have to be there from behind and be able to push them and be able to police them sometimes in a teammate kind of way. You're not the coach. And we always tell our captains that if you're going to keep your teammates accountable for anything, you're not going to keep them accountable for execution, but you're going to keep them accountable for effort. And that's where the line is drawn. And so that's leading from behind, to be able to step in and say, as an extension to the coaching staff and what we're trying to do and where we're trying to go with the ship. Because it is your job to make sure that you help the coaching staff steer the ship, but you're still a teammate and you're never going to be a coach, but you can definitely keep them accountable on work ethic and effort. So that those would be my things on leadership, but they're definitely leadership is service.
And we have alumni that are leaders in different domains. And how would you say would be maybe something that's transferable from hockey? That's a way that you can teach leadership to your followers.
Well, I think sport is a metaphor for life. So, I mean, if you speak to anybody from outside hockey, it's the same thing. I mean, you've got people that need to in your organization that need to keep others accountable, and at the same time make sure that there are good role models within your company if you want to have success, and you also want to make sure that you're there for them as a leader, and that's not just the CEO or the boss or the president. I think it's everybody can be a leader in an organization and a company and a group and an enterprise. I think the key is to be willing to service the group so that the group moves ahead, and I think from the group moving ahead, then growing can happen for each individual. And I think it's a win-win. And I think that's what groups are all about. And that's why we love team sports. And, you know, I love individual sports. My wife coaches figure skating. It's a great individual sport. And I enjoyed watching that, you know, since I've got to know her and learned the sport. But we also love team sports because of the fact that there is more to it than just individual effort. It's about both individual effort and group effort. And so I think it's fantastic. And that's a great analogy for any company or group.
So now flipping that on its side, maybe what are some examples of some poor leadership behaviors or some negative leadership behaviors that you would recommend people to steer away from?
That one's a little harder to tell you the truth, but I think preparation is something you need to be careful that you underprepare. I think that as a leader, you need to over-prepare more than under-prepare for sure. You need to be ready for what might happen and it may not happen. And I think that's as much as an assistant coach as it is for a head coach. If we're talking hockey again, I always try as an assistant coach to try and be ready for what the head coach might ask me. Not necessarily what he asked me to do, but also what he might ask me to do down the road or what he ask my advice, or so always try to do that. You want to make sure that you're, as a leader, you're a team player. I think that being able to have good teamwork starts with you as a leader, and so, you know, it's not be all end all because you're the boss that you don't cooperate with anybody else. So got to be careful about those things. Other than that, you got to make sure that you want to create an atmosphere that's fun, but it also needs to be an atmosphere that has discipline as well. So you need to have both there in order for it to be growth. You know, an atmosphere of just fun is not going to be conducive to learning, and an atmosphere with only discipline is not going to be helping your players. If again, I'm staying in hockey. It's not going to help your players grow. So you got to be able to do those. So those are the things you need to be careful with, not going into extremes, trying to be balanced. And what we talk with DeMortang with our players, especially with the juvenile group, is trying to hit the bullseye. You know, got to make sure you're in the bullseye. So if you want to be a good leader, you got to be right there in the middle of the target and not be too far into the extremes, you know, whether you're too hard or too soft, too emotional and not enough emotional. I think you need to be right there in the middle and hit the target. And you have to find your target as a player, but you also have to find a target also as a group. So, and that you learn as you go and through trial and error, but you got to make sure as a leader that you don't fall into the extremes.
All right. Now steering the conversation a little bit towards mentorship. Think back to your time playing at McGill and think about some influential teammates that you had. And what's an example of something that they did that demonstrates how they left an impact on you?
Well, you know, I've been very lucky. I've had great teammates. And, you know, like I look back, I mean, the most prominent teammate that I have for the hockey people, as you know, is Guy Boucher. And And Guy was a great friend of mine even before he got to McGill. And Jean Pronovost had asked us, some of the players, to help recruit. So I knew Guy, and he was playing at the CJEP team where I played. So I helped recruit Guy and convince him to come to McGill. And so it was a lot of fun to play with him. But we were friends before. So, you know, we had a relationship from a long time ago. But Guy was obviously had a tremendous impact for me, because even after he graduated and he was an assistant coach for us at McGill for a year, then he left for the Cube. But we always stayed in touch with each other, and we always helped each other out. So, you know, we would fax each other back then, for those who don't know what a fax is, before email. And so we would I would send him mostly stories so that he could use them before games and stuff. And then he would send me systems. And so he would send me all these set breakouts and all these different things that he was doing with his team. So he was very influential, as we all know. My opportunity to coach pro is because of Guy. If not, you know, I probably would have wind up staying at McGill longer. So Guy had a tremendous impact in my life, no doubt about that. Specific stories, though, I don't know if I have any other than what I just told you. I mean, those are all like day-to-day stuff that we helped each other. And if any story my wife could be able to tell you is him calling me at 10:30 at night or 11 o'clock at night. In those days, you know, we had landlines, and so the kids are in bed, and now I'm talking till 1 a.m. about hockey, and then got to go to school with the kids the next day and get up early in the morning for breakfast for the kids. So, you know, I would hear about it. Sometimes we had a lot of fun with that. She laughs at that all the time. But other than that, I mean, my best man at my wedding was Alain Cusson. He was a teammate at McGill. You know, he's still my accountant. He's a great guy. I really enjoy him. Really good friend. One guy that when you sent me that question, is guy that came to mind was David Huck. And David Huck was is a fantastic person and a hell of a competitor from out west, and I believe from Saskatchewan. He lives in Calgary now. Dave is a great community person. Like he's got a big family. He's adopted kids from Africa. He's successful businessman, and you know, like, he was so committed, and he was so open-minded as a person. He was so resilient. The story with Dave that we could tell here on this podcast, I'm sure you wouldn't mind, because most of the guys from the old days know it, is that Dave one year couldn't afford an apartment. So he had found a mini school bus, and he had driven from Saskatchewan all the way to McGill with it during the summer so that he could show up on time for classes. And he lived in that bus until Mike Nelson found him a place to stay with some people he knew in downtown, and were able somewhere where he could afford to stay. And but he was resilient, I'll tell you. And he was such a great person, a hell of a team player and a hard worker. We had a lot of fun with it. And lastly, I mean, I can't go on talking about teammates without talking about Jamie Compon. Jamie's an assistant coach with Winnipeg Jets. He's won two cups as an assistant coach. He's one of the premier coaches in the league, in the National Hockey League right now, having won in Chicago, but before that in LA as well, as an assistant coach in both places. And so, Jimmy really helped me out. He helped me out when I was in Ottawa. I had some questions sometimes with certain situations that arrived there, and I could always call him and ask him advice. And my first year, I broke my collarbone in January. So I only played half the year. I missed the playoffs as well. I couldn't, the collarbone wouldn't heal. I came back too early is what happened. But Jamie took me in under his wing when I broke my collarbone, because I couldn't drive. It was hurting like crazy. And I used to commute to my parents' house in Pierrefonds, which was about 35 minutes away. So Jamie said, why don't you come live in my place? The challenge was that Jamie was living in a 1.5 above Emilio's Pizzeria back then on Lauren Crescent. And so, you know, like, we lived, two guys, I wouldn't go to practice. I'd prepare dinner most of the time, probably most of the time I'd buy pizza, but sometimes I'd prepare dinner. And so, and then Jamie would go to practice, and then he would come back and have dinner after, and and we would chat about hockey, and he knew all the stats already, all NHL stats. He's a math. He was learning to be a math teacher as well as phys ed. In those days, we had two subjects. And so we had a lot of fun. So for there, I was there for two months in a 1.5. And I don't even remember where I slept, to tell you the truth. That's been so long ago. But Jamie was great for me. He really took me under his wing as a rookie. And we had a lot of fun.
On that same topic of mentors and thinking, not so much about teammates, but other mentors in your life, what are some qualities you look for in a mentor? And who are those mentors in your life?
I think I've had many people that have helped me through the years, as you know, and, you know, I'm always looking for advice, always try to have a good ear to good people. And I think the key is here, exactly, good people. You know, like you're looking for people that are doing things the right way, you know, that are treating people the way they should be treated. And for me, that's really, really important. And I've had many. And it starts with my parents, you know. Like I remember early on when I first started dating Christine, and you know, we moved into our own home and all that. And you know, I would call home a lot and ask my parents for advice, all kinds of things, you know, raising kids. And so my mom and dad were, you know, they're my first mentors and very important people, are still very important people in my life. And I still refer to them. I try not to burn them with all my questions though anymore, but they're great. And they really helped me through the years with all the different questions that we have, you know, as parents and as employees and leaders in our jobs. Once I got into coaching, Jamie and I took over John Pronovo the 1 year that John left halfway through the year. And Jamie and I were assistant coaches with Jean. And so one guy that really helped me out through the years was Jean St. Pierre. Jean was still coaching other teams at that time. He wasn't coaching with us yet. For those who don't know, Jean St. Pierre is still part of the program as an assistant coach and, you know, a B worker for our program. So Jean really helped me out. He talked to me about not worrying too much about the X's and O's back then, and make sure that I had a feel for the game and a feel for my players. And so I remember that advice, especially as we went, Jamie and I were trying to make the playoffs, and we were going to one game in Ottawa where we had to win or else we didn't make the playoffs that year. And so we were in fourth place, and we finished in second by winning that game. And I remember that advice from Jean. I still remember that. So Jean was really good to me. When we were looking to get over that hump, Erks, in your playing days, and we were trying to get to the national championship, and we hadn't done it in, what was it, 60 years. And so I reached out to Mike Babcock a lot, and Mike really helped me out as a coach, you know, like really trying to make sure that we were focused on the process and we were focused on the right things. And so he was really, really good as well. I mean, Mike Nelson is still a great mentor for me as Friends of McGill Hockey president. He's supported me through all the years, you know, like after Jamie and I didn't get the job the first time around when the job was open and Terry Bangin got the job, and Terry became an important mentor to me afterwards as well. But Mike was there for me and tried to explain to me that I was going to be able to learn from Terry. He was a coach with a lot of experience. And you know, unfortunately, Terry only stayed 1 year, but I still learned a lot, and I still learn from him. I call him sometimes, I email him, I ask him for advice. So, you know, those are some of the guys that have really, really helped me out through the years. You know, guys like Charlie Bailey, who's coaching football at McGill. I would go to his office often and sit down with him when I first started coaching as a full-time coach as well. And Charlie was great. You know, he had lots of wisdom. He had been coaching for probably over 30 years back then at McGill. And so, you know, he knew all the tricks of the trade and how to do things, you know, how to handle different situations in the administration with our team. So those are some of the people that really, really helped me out. And I'm forgetting a lot, I know, but I don't want to go on forever with this, but I've been fortunate to have a lot of good people over the years to support me and answer my questions.
Now I want to talk a little bit about resiliency, and you know, with your background in sports psychology and extensive coaching career, I want you to think about facing high pressure situations and in times when you need to make a difficult decision. Are there any specific tactics, tools, or processes you use in your approach?
You hear a lot about process, and it's very easy to say, but how do you do that? And the one line that really, really helped me out as a coach, and it was probably close to your time when you came into McGill, we started to figure out that what Bill Walsh talked about in his book, about the score will take care of itself. For me, that really helps me in any pressure situation, because then I don't worry about the outcome. You know, like some people will say, just surrender the outcome. And I buy into that, because that's how I coach now. Since the mid 2000s, that has been my motto as a coach, to focus on that. Just don't worry about the score. Just don't worry about the results at all. I know it's easy to say, but you know, you try and you practice it and you get used to it. And then, you know, early on, it's probably anxiety producing. I mean, you feel like you're letting go of things, but really, really that's the best way to do it. You know, like I think if you do that, you're giving yourself a chance to win, and that's all you can control. You worry about the things you control. And that's why I try to repeat myself when we're in high pressure situation is just worry about the things that we control and not worry about anything else. And then whatever happens, happens, and may the chips fall where they may. But I think if you're well prepared and your process is the proper one, then I think you've got a good chance. You're giving yourself an opportunity. That's all you can do. That's all you can control. So I believe in that.
On that same topic of resiliency, do you have any experiences you want to share where you overcame a setback or failure and some specific habits or routines that you use to overcome the setback?
Well, I mean, the most recent one is the Uber incident. I mean, we all know what happened there. And so that wasn't fun for anybody to go through, not for the players either. The one thing I try to do to try and help me stay in the moment is I stole it from Phil Jackson in 99 when I read his book, Sacred Hoops, is I started looking into meditation. So since the early 2000s, we had brought that to our players, sometimes for the group, the whole group. And sometimes when I saw that some of the guys didn't buy into that, we would just try and do it individually. But I try to do that regularly every week. I've got the Headspace app on my phone. I read on it a lot. We do, you know, I look up stuff on YouTube on different breathing exercises, relaxation techniques. We try and teach that to our kids in Dumartang. It gives you other tools to try and deal with adversity. And sometimes when you get kicked out of the moment, you try and kick back in. And that, you know, if you practice that, then I think it helps you. So being able to stay in the moment when you meditate and when you're breathing and when you're doing these relaxation techniques, whichever they are, I think that really helps you in the crunch. I really believe you have to prepare for the crunch before it happens, and you need to train it the same way you're weightlifting or you're running. You're getting to train the mind to be able to take deep breaths and being able to focus on the right things and focus on the moment and focused on one thing, you know, one pointed attention, I think is important to be able to do that as a skill. So those are the kind of things that I do to try and prepare for setback. And then after that, you just, you know, you follow your heart and you do the right things. You try to be a good person as best you can. And usually you'll get out of tough moments.
Now you may have answered this question with the last one, talking about habits. Is in the last couple of years, are there any new habits or routines that have positively impacted your life?
Mm-hmm. Well, the last 2 years, what happened is I've come back to coaching at school, right? You know, I was fortunate enough to coach for many years at university at McGill. And so, you know, I was in a school setting. I really, really enjoyed it. I wasn't looking to go coach pro. I got the opportunity with a really good friend of mine that I really trusted, that I still trust tremendously. And so I did the move. But to come back to school and work with you know, kids that are in a school setting, and being able to get on the ice still every day, and being able to spend more time with my family. Like for me, that has been the biggest change in the last 2 years, you know, a year and a half now. And so I don't regret, you know, not pursuing another job in the pro 2 years ago when it happened. You know, I got a few phone calls and I had been preparing that move a year before. So, you know, the last year at Ottawa and what happened was not the reason why I left or why I didn't pursue coaching pro. I had already made my mind. I had told Guy that the year before that was going to be my last year if he wanted me to. And when I was going to finish my contract, but after that, I wasn't going to look for any contract in the pro. I was going to come back home. Met the family for 10 years. We had made a decision, Christine and I, to keep the kids in school. They were in good high schools, really well supported there. And I was concerned that they wouldn't get the same support wherever we would go. At that time, it was Hamilton the first time when I went to the American Hockey League. So the habit that I changed is I'm home every day. I'm having dinner every day at home. I'm spending time with my kids and my wife. You know, on weekends we get to do family stuff, and that's what I've changed. And you know what? It's been great. I really enjoy it. It's what I was longing for the last couple of years in the pro. I was looking to come back, and I'm glad I am. So that's pretty much that's the biggest routine change, I'd say. And it's been a good one for me.
And last one of the formal questions we have here is, how do you define mastery?
A lifetime of learning. Babs taught me a lot in the mid 2000s when we were looking to make it to the national championship tournament. And the one thing I learned the most, or I remember the most, and I still use it, and I repeat it to our coaches in Domortang, I repeat it to myself, I repeat it to our family, is that life is about growth. You got to keep learning. You know, when Socrates says, all I know is I don't know, is exactly, that's what he was trying to say. Or that's the way I interpret it anyway, is that, you know, you want to keep learning because you never know enough. You never know everything. There's always something to learn. And I learned a lot. I'm learning a lot now in Domortang with our Sportitude coaches. I mean, we've got like 9 full-time coaches there, and they're great. They're really good coaches. They all bring great strengths to the kids, great strengths to the program. And I'm listening and I'm watching their practices and their drills. And every year we often change coaches, like who's head coach, who's assistant coach for which program. And I'm learning from everybody, you know, And I think that's what mastery is about. It's about trying to see how much you can learn and, you know, how much there is to learn in your craft. So I feel fortunate to be able to still do that and, you know, make a living out of coaching and learning more about the game and about the business of leading young kids and young players in the game that we love. So I think that's my short version.
All right, we'll finish off with a couple quick hitters here. So just, I'll throw them at you. And I just want you to say the first thing that comes to mind. Favorite pregame meal?
Altos.
Best smoked meat in Montreal?
Oh, geez. I wouldn't go often, as you can tell. I'm going to say Rubens.
Which U Sports city has the best roasted chicken?
The Poulet Fusé in Trois-Rivières. How's that?
And then
after a win.
And then is there anything better than Altos?
No, no, definitely not. Okay. Definitely not. I still go there sometimes. Yeah. Tom is still there. We still have a lot of fun chatting about hockey.
All right. And then I had one question thrown in from Luke Medill. And he wants you to think back to the 2004-05 season when we went to France for our Europe trip and we got whooped by the Russian national B team 9-2 in a game that was terribly officiated. And that night, a few of the players saw that the refs were staying at our hotel and they ended up putting a leaner on the ref's door, soaking his feet and soaking the room. I don't know if you remember that. And the next day,
I do.
And the next day, as a team, we got reprimanded pretty badly for our behavior. And Luke wanted to know if you were actually really mad at us or you're happy that we did that to the ref.
No, I was really mad because I got woken up at the late in the night about it by the hotel receptionist, and I was going like, oh dog, what happened here? Like, you can't do that stuff. No, I was mad. I definitely was mad. I didn't think you guys needed to do that, because you know, Russians were way better than us and we were still jet lagged. So I wasn't mad at the refs that bad. I mean, not to that extent. No way.
Thanks, Marty. And with that, we wrap things up for the first episode of the Leadership Line Change podcast. Be sure to tune in 2 weeks for the next episode of Captain's Meeting with Ken Tyler. And following that, our next episode of the Leadership Line Change with Luke Medill. Until next time, keep your elbows up and your sticks on the ice.